and welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Well, we're just back from the Arizona Fall League, and that will be part of our latest podcast. Of course, we're also in the middle of the World Series, and a guy who's in the midst of it all is in Chicago right now. He's Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Topper, thanks for being part of the latest podcast.
Anytime, Neil. You know it's always a highlight for me.
I'm sure. But I'm sure a bigger highlight is this World Series. Now, how many is this that you've covered?
Well, it's over 20. I did from 88 on until about 2011 or so, and then we've kind of picked and choosed a little bit there. So definitely in the 20-plus category, 25 or so, I think. And yeah, obviously nothing will ever top the 2008 World Series with the Rays being involved. But I was at the Earthquake World Series, so that one's pretty high on the list too, obviously, in 89. And seen some really cool things. Tremendously privileged to have seen all these, and this is a pretty good one so far.
I was going to ask you, in terms of familiarity, other than 08, is there more familiarity for you in this one than any other?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, Neil. There was the 1990 World Series with La Russa against Pinella, so there was obviously a lot of, you know, Tampa theme to that one. Not as much with the players, but, you know, certainly from the standpoint of our coverage and two Tampa guys going up against each other. But yeah, I think in terms of just the number of, you know, uniformed personnel on both teams, you know, coaches and players, you know, some active, some inactive, but uniformed personnel. I mean, I was at the Indians clubhouse the other night, and, you know, talking to Brandon Guyer after the game, and I got done, and you know, there's Chris Jimenez, and I'm talking to him for a minute, and then Mickey Callaway walks by, who was with the Devil Rays and is their pitching coach, and Matt Quatrero, who's their assistant hitting coach, walks by, and you know, just a lot of familiar faces in that regard. And then I'd forgotten Joey Knight of our paper pointed out to me, you know, Dan Otero had pitched at USF as well, so a little Tampa angle there. And then obviously on the Cubs side, and, you know, it starts with Joe Maddon and Ben Zobrist, but Mike Montgomery as well. And there's some other guys that, you know, you've seen come through at different times.
Does it make it easier to cover? Do you stay on the local path or do you stay? I mean, you've kind of had an interesting, you know, feel for both sides of this, but is it, do you want to make sure you're on the local or do you want to stay on the story, which obviously in game two I think was Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, I think you kind of find a mix, and part of it is what time the game ends too, and then yeah, what you can write about as far as what gets in the paper. But yeah, you know, I think part of the reason that you know, when you're a neutral market paper such as the Tampa Bay Times, you know, you're there for specific reasons. I mean, in this case, the Cubs overall is a historical, you know, accomplishment for them to be in a World Series, much less if they were to win one. Joe Maddon is certainly a major personality in the Tampa Bay market still from his time with the Rays and still living there. So, you know, I think you kind of look for the local story. You know, that's kind of why you're there, is to give your readers something that, you know, they wouldn't get otherwise, and that tends to be the local, but also, you know, sometimes to offer perspective.
And a really nice feature on Brandon Guyer in the latest. I mean, again, you've got a lot of good angles to cover all the way around. In terms of the World Series itself, you picked the Cubs in five, I picked them in six. I think to me in large part because of what we saw last night. That is, if the Indians had a healthy Salazar and Carrasco back, I think this is a much more evenly matched up series on the pitching front. You feel the same?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, the fact that the Indians, I think they really only trust Corey Kluber and they want to trust Josh Tomlin. I think we saw in game two why they probably don't have a lot of trust in Trevor Bauer. So, you know, the Indians are going to be in a tough spot because by, you know, committing to pitching Kluber in game four and the potential that they could be down 2-1 at that point, then they're going with their ace, but they're going with them in less than ideal situations on short rest. If that doesn't work out, you could see where, you know, there'd be a little bit of sense of doom and gloom and panic, and their confidence kind of leaves them because they don't really have another option at that point. So that's the gamble they're going to take. But on the other hand, as you say, without Carrasco, without a fully healthy Salazar, you know, they made the decision to not use Merritt as a starter. I mean, maybe they felt like, you know, they got away with one against Toronto and didn't want to push that. But, you know, that'll be things if they lose, especially if they lose, you know, in five games, that they'll spend a lot of time, you know, reviewing and maybe second-guessing themselves.
Certainly. But, you know, and I point out in a blog this week, I think part of the reason the Cubs have been so great, and certainly it starts with their talent, but they've had six guys play over 140 games in the field. Four guys made 30 regular season starts, and John Lackey made 29. So, by and large, other than Kyle Schwarber, this has been a pretty healthy group all year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, probably the only reason some of those games played numbers are maybe not as even higher is that they've platooned at some spots and they've used, you know, some different guys in different situations. But, yeah, they've had their team outside of Schwarber relatively intact. They built the team to be very successful. They knew they were going to have a target on their back. Joe Maddon did a very good job at the start of spring training of telling them that's going to be the case, of laying it out for them. And, you know, I asked Theo Epstein last week what was the best thing Joe's done this year, and he said it was the way he handled the expectations, and that all goes back to spring training. And, look, we've all been around Joe Maddon with the Rays, and after they won in 08, yeah, that changed the paradigm and the dynamic for them. And he had the same spiel at that point. It was, you have to embrace the target. You have to welcome the expectations, welcome the pressure. Why would you want to be on a team that people didn't think was going to do well? And that's always been the way he has spun that, and I think the Cubs have bought into it very well.
No doubt. I do think, and it's no discredit to any players on the Rays, I mean, this may be the most talented team he's managed. Do you agree?
I would think so, and you know, that Rays team certainly had some talent, but not to this level, and you look at some of the, you know, high-end young players here, and Evan Longoria and David Price were pretty good high-end young players at the time as well, and have lived up to their billing. But some of the other guys that they have, you know, maybe whereas the Rays had two or three really, really good, promising young players, the Cubs might have five or six, and whereas the Rays had, you know, some veterans on that team who played key roles, Cliff Floyd, Eric Kinski, Troy Percival. I think the roles played by the veterans on this Cubs team, you know, John Lester, John Lackey, Ben Zobrist now being a veteran-type guy, David Ross, you know, a little lower tier there. But those first three, you know, kind of star-quality veterans that they've added to the mix as well. And then they went out and got the big piece at the trade deadline with Chapman.
Indeed. The big question I have in the games in Chicago is Kyle Schwarber. Do you think he plays the field? I think he pinch hits, but does it really matter?
Well, that's going to be a big topic of discussion right up until first pitch on Friday, I'm sure, or at least until the lineups come out, and there'll be plenty of second-guessing either way. Yeah, I will say this, that the Cubs made a bold move in bringing him back and putting him in the lineup and DHing him and, you know, obviously letting him run the bases, you know, more or less as he wants to. It kind of feels like they might be pushing it to put him in the lineup. He wasn't a great defensive outfielder to begin with. They've kind of pieced this together pretty well. I mean, if he were to go to left field and Zobrist would go to right, and they would just have to kind of, you know, put all three of the other guys they've been using, Solar, Almora, Hayward, all those guys, Coughlin, I mean, none of those guys would be in the lineup, obviously, because Zobrist certainly will be. So I guess you could almost break it down this way: is would you rather have Schwarber bat a couple times early in the game, knowing if it's close, you may have to take him out and not have his bat late because you need a defense for him, or would you rather have him on the bench, knowing you can use him at any time, but only if a situation arises? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really going to be a philosophical thing. Now, on the other hand, the way Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein think, they may decide what the heck and just push it and put him out there, and if something goes wrong, deal with it then.
And it's going to be very intriguing from that regard. The other thing I had, and this is off the World Series page, but Rob Manfred, not necessarily on what he said regarding the Tampa Bay and the stadium situation, but more so that they're close to having the whole new collective bargaining agreement done. Are you hearing anything how different it may be and how it may impact the Rays, good or bad?
Yeah, haven't really heard much yet. I know, you know, a couple weeks ago there was some chatter that there probably wouldn't be a lot of significant changes. I mean, the idea of the international draft is certainly something that could help the Rays because it would limit, you know, other teams from being able to sign as many guys and put their spending perhaps under some kind of limits, such it is on the domestic draft. But I didn't get the sense that there was going to be a lot of significant changes. I know the Rays obviously are looking for, you know, different ways to help them competitively, whether that's, you know, they floated things in the past of should draft picks, you know, not just be tied to one loss record, should they be tied to revenue, should they be tied to revenue stream. And you know, then the competitive balance picks were added, but that was formulated in such a way that teams like the St. Louis Cardinals have gotten competitive balance picks, and they wouldn't seem like a team that would need help. So, you know, I think the Rays are always going to push for those type of things, but I did not get the sense there would be significant changes along those lines.
Well, it'll be interesting to follow, certainly, as this World Series has been, and we've enjoyed your coverage, and enjoy the time in the Windy City and the rest of this World Series.
All right, Neil, and then when I get back, you can take me out to lunch like you promised.
Indeed. That is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, of course, covering the World Series and providing some great stuff there. Now, as you mentioned at the top of the podcast, we also spent the past few days in the Arizona Fall League, which is where some of the Rays' top prospects are for the next several weeks until about the week before Thanksgiving. And among those I sat down with was the manager, and that's actually Jared Sandberg, who managed the last 2 years at AAA Durham, and asked him to compare what it's like managing in a minor league season to here in the Arizona Fall League.
It's a lot different. It's my first experience here in the Arizona Fall League. I didn't play out here. I had one maybe 3 week stint in a spring training back in 07 out here in Arizona. So this is really exciting for me. It's a new opportunity. I get to be around some different organizations, the different organizations that are with our team, some different players, some top prospects. Get to manage a little bit different style of game. It's not necessarily it is for development, but it's just letting the players play. I haven't put on a sign yet. Here we are 2 weeks in. What are we, 11, 12 games in? So it's a pretty exciting opportunity and something new for me.
What's different about managing players other than your own?
What's different? I think everything. You know, it was a quick learning curve to try and get to know everybody's first name, last name, what position they played, what was their secondary position, not, let alone the pitchers, the bullpen guys, their secondary pitches. So it's been a fun ride. It's been a long days. We had some individual meeting. Actually, we had an individual meeting with every player coming in, so that gave everybody some face time from a coaching staff to player to coaching staff, and got to know everybody pretty quickly, which it was tough to do, but it was a lot of fun.
How about the kids you're managing from the Rays? What have they been like so far? I know they've performed pretty well.
They're off to a good start, and it's a lot of fun because I haven't seen them play a whole lot. And so for me to get to know, you know, some younger players in the organization, you know, I could read all about them, but now I get to have, you know, some one-on-one time with them from a developmental standpoint, whether it's, you know, watching them in the cage or Shufo and I working off the machine, working on some receiving or blocking. And then just getting to know Keon Wong, a quiet kid. Then you got a Diego Castillo that's come in, and, you know, he's quiet as well. So trying to get these guys to open up a little bit and get to know them, it's good for me in my development as well to get to know more people.
How much does it help to see them in the clubhouse side of things? Because it's not only what you're seeing on the field, but also outside the lines.
Yeah, so there's two apartments. There's three kids in each apartment. So, you know, for me and them coming into the team, you know, they can be in their little pod or their apartment in their threesome. But when they get here, you know, they're getting to know new people and new players from other organizations. So it's good for them from a personality standpoint. And, you know, for some of the quiet ones, they got to kind of get out there and see what's out there. But also they know that it's a team, a good team and atmosphere and environment, a good clubhouse, and they got to be good teammates. And they're doing a tremendous job. They're off to a good start, and they're also you know, learning along the way.
Is it kind of nice too to see and compare maybe how some of your kids are to some of the other kids that have been sent to the Fall League?
Yeah, and we're getting raving reviews from our players. You know, how they act on and off the field, their work ethic, how well spoken they are, and then just talent alone. You know, because they're not necessarily in the top 100 prospects other than Honeywell. So, you know, some of the other kids come in here with top prospect status and some notoriety. But for them to, you know, come in here and then get off to a good start, make a name for themselves, and people are talking about them, it's really, really good for the individual players that are here, but also the Rays organization.
That's Rays minor league manager Jared Sandberg. And again, a lot of the kids are making a name for themselves. And over the course of the next several weeks, we'll be introducing a lot of video interviews that we did. You can go to RaysBaseball.com/video. But I really found the group of seven minor league players that the Rays have over in Arizona quite intriguing. I mean, most people know the story of Brent Honeywell, the Rays minor league pitcher of the year who throws a screwball. But I mean, the other pitchers that are there, Diego Castillo is a kid who throws upper 90s, who also we found out is quite a good cook as well. And he's shown a lot of gas in terms of his fastball in the Arizona Fall League. Kyle Bird is a lefty who was a 35th round pick. That's 1,057th overall in the 2014 draft. And 2 years later, he's in the Fall League and a promising left-hander. And Greg Harris is a kid who was the Charlotte MVP this year, whose father played 15 years in the big league. So real intriguing stuff on the pitching side. Nick Shufo was the Rays Defensive Player of the Year. Keon Wong has a tremendous family history and has always hit well in the Rays organization. And Justin Williams may be the top hitting prospect that the Rays have over in Arizona. Lightning quick bat, tremendous individual. Great getting to know him a little bit. And again, you can follow some of those stories, RaysBaseball.com/video. Now, our next podcast is probably going to come when the World Series is done. That's truly when the offseason begins for a lot of clubs in terms of moves happening on a more frequent basis. So that'll be our next podcast. Enjoy the rest of the World Series. We'll talk to you soon.